Welcome to Thanks for the Memories, where we are out for a walk, bitch.
Starting on the best note.
I just really wanted to say that. Oh, it's yes. My favorite line. Yes. My name is Leslie. I use they, them pronouns, and I am in the hellmouth of Boston, MA for the next 3 weeks until I join my co-host, Kate.
Yeah, we're moving we're in live together. We're going to be part. Wow. Yeah, we're having a Golden Girls situation. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all going to be in a hellmouth together.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I'm definitely Sophia. Well, we'll talk about that later.
I guess I have to be Blanche. But anyway, my name is Kate. My pronouns are she, her, they, them. And I'm in the hellmouth of South Philadelphia getting my nest feathered for Leslie.
Clean that kitchen table.
Leslie and I are actually not moving in together, but
no, but I am going to be in the area very soon.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, you know, Kate, you're such a kitchen table gal. I know. I was like, yeah, of course she's going to bring in her podcast partner.
All my podcast partners have to move in with me. Yeah, well, that's later. That's when I get the, you know, the commune in, like,
You need more bedrooms for that?
I do. I only have two bedrooms. Yeah, so.
Gotcha.
I don't take up a lot of space.
One's for podcasting. We have a guest.
Yeah, if you couldn't figure that out.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
Returning guest.
Yeah.
Hi, yes. Hi, thank you so much for having me. My name is Luisa Diaz. I'm a she, her pronouns user. And yeah, I'm here to talk about Buffy.
Hell yes.
So good. Thank you so much for coming back. We had such a good time talking about
The Craft.
The Craft, yeah. Yep.
I loved it.
Yes, and we know you're a Buffy watcher, so we were like, to get Luisa back for another episode where we actually talk about Buffy.
Well, you know that I had not watched Buffy since my last rewatch, which was probably like 10 years ago. Maybe like seven, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was sort of frustrating to be like, oh, we're going to jump right here in with the dawn. Jen, okay, fine.
season five really is the point where, you know, every episode has a previously on Buffy.
Yeah.
So it's really not the point where you want to be a newbie and dive in. Like, absolutely. I would even argue, like, you could do it in season four.
I think so.
Season four did kind of like a soft reboot because she was in, going into college instead of high school. But season five, like, if you don't know what's going on, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of inside jokes by the time we get to season
five. Not just that, but like Riley, for example, I think is not even a character you could understand just from season five.
You don't know his whole deal.
Yeah, because he's like a random boyfriend.
And at this point,
always
he's
sad.
Yeah, now at this point, he's like a deflated version of himself.
Yeah,
like, I have so much to say about him.
He's just
holy
like
shit.
Leslie, start us off, because honestly, the main, in these two episodes, let me see again. It was No Place Like Mine.
Oh yeah, so okay, so
family.
Well,
oh yeah,
yeah, let's focus. Yes. Let's focus. So
okay, all right.
No Place Like Home and Family. So I think that they both had, they were Dawn heavy, and we meet Glory.
Yay,
Glory. Yeah. And also, I think they're also Riley heavy.
Yeah, yes. Unfortunately.
So I think, go for it, Leslie. Start with Riley.
Kate, do you want to pop up in the
here,
wiki
I'll
real
do
quick?
In my, I'll do my wiki.
Yeah.
Okay, so
so we have a foundation to lay all of our shit
first
on.
First episode, No Place Like Home.
I love an outline.
An unseen evil comes to Sunnydale. Oh, this is a poorly written wiki.
Yeah, that's already a lie.
An unseen evil comes to Sunnydale. That helps Buffy discover more about her little sister Dawn. And the girls are distressed and confused when their mom suddenly becomes ill without any clear explanation, medical or supernatural. Wiki, get your shit together. That was not written properly.
Those are both two lies, just straight up untruths.
Written by an AI who's never seen Buffy. But okay, do you want to talk about Riley right away, or do you have other things you'd like
to? It's just, I mean, I definitely have other stuff that I'd love to get to, but just like, it's just so insane to me how his hangups, it was never an issue before now. Like, as right? soon as he, stops getting the unregulated government dick
well,
pills.
That's why. Yeah.
But, like, it's just so incredibly insane. Like,
well, but is it?
He's a sad little man. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I honestly, okay, so I know that the Joss Whedon name is tainted now, but, like,
yeah.
If we, like, look at just the framework of the Joss Whedon universes that he creates, he tends to focus on, I guess, what, like, the main society, you know, hegemonic society would call, like, a beta male, right? So yeah. He writes women characters and the beta males that are comfortable around women and women are comfortable around, because that's how he saw himself, right? But we don't need to go there about Joss Whedon. Let's focus on the text.
Yeah.
So I think, like, even before Riley, even Angel, when he turned bad and all this stuff, like, the men were still, like, they still had this, like, soft, relatable side, right?
Yeah.
But even Spike, we're starting to see that now this season. Ooh, put a pin in that one, too. Let's hold on that.
One of my favorite parts.
Oh, yeah. Totally. But Riley is the first one where, it's fucked up to say that we see toxic masculinity in, because obviously the vampires have toxic masculinity. But it's sort of like expected. It's sort of like, you know how they teach kids, like, ooh, stranger danger, but then, like, the majority of, like, abuse happens by family and family friends.
Right.
So you are misdirecting where the danger really is. You know what I mean? So to me, it feels like the majority of males before Riley were either, like, full-on beta males or, like, obviously this was a threat. You should have known that. His whole face changed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or even, like, just, like, I'm thinking back to, like, Parker, like, the first guy that she, like, hooks up with in college. So, like, you're either a Xander or a Parker.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And then we get Riley, who is...
And both of them are fuckboys, Xander and Parker. One of them won't fuck you and one of them will, but then they both leave you.
And then they're both also, like, privately bitter about what they did and did not get from you.
Yeah.
And they never, like, actually communicated that shit, you know?
Right.
And
yeah, exactly.
That's why Riley is kind of, like, the worst to me, because, I mean, but he's also a good, valuable character, because what he's showing us is the so-called, like, perfect boyfriend turns out to not be perfect.
Yeah, I think that is important.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, he didn't seem dangerous. He seemed like he checks all the boxes. He's smart. He's good looking. He's kind. He has his own pursuits.
Iowa.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Like, he can measure up to her in all of her pursuits and abilities. You know, like, it was like, oh, great. This is a match made in heaven. And then the more you learned actually in season 4, I think all the red flags start to come out, because now we have a person who's actually part of the military. So he actually is a follower who believes in things like patriotism.
Yeah.
And, like,
and takes orders. Yeah,
takes, like, orders.
My favorite line from season 4 is one of the generals or whatever is like, we have to get rid of Riley Finn. He can't be controlled anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
We know he becomes an anarchist at the end of season 4.
Yeah, but that...
Oh, if only.
I mean, but that's kind of like the window that shows you that he was, like, I guess, a codependent. Like, he was never complete before her. He seemed to be complete, but he was actually codependent with that mother person, right? And the general lady, didn't they call her?
Yeah, Maggie.
And then when he had Buffy, and so then, like, the fact that he changes in season 5 to be so, like, petty and, like, a crybaby, and it's just like, well, you let me know when you want to let me in. Or actually, the thing he specifically says to her at one point is like, you didn't call me when your mom got sick. And it's like, okay, I understand.
Yeah, like, fuck you, dude.
But dude, you're going to, like, bring that up? Like, her mom is possibly dying in the hospital and you're worried that you didn't get the first call and you're telling her that at this time? That's fucking insane.
Yeah. You know?
And so the fact that he went from like hyper confident, like her equal, to needing her gaze and her approval in order to find his own place, I actually think of as like a valuable lesson more for the viewers than for Buffy, because she didn't learn the lesson.
Yeah. I mean, it takes her a while. Like, I feel like she has, like, you can tell that Riley is kind of a side piece to her already. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he just kind of is around.
Yeah, an afterthought.
And, like, later, you know, like, when they go to Tara's party, she's like, thanks for coming. Like, he wouldn't mm-hmm. have showed up anyway. But, like, what else does he have to do?
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, he's definitely, I feel like she doesn't know it yet, but she's started already pushing him to the
outgrowing
side.
Outgrowing him, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, outgrowing yeah. him mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah. And, like, he knows that. But we talked about it 2 or 3 episodes ago.
Totally. Mm-hmm. But you know what's really strange? And I think maybe for those of us who date men, because I think men are the most likely to behave how Riley has behaved.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that she, you'll see like later down the season, I'm not spoiling anything, but she just like, we encounter with her the conflict of like, her knowing what is the right thing to do in terms of this relationship and not being able to do it because she doesn't want to hurt his feelings.
Right.
And yeah. that I think is like a super important lesson that like, you know, Joss Whedon is hit or miss, I think, in writing women and women's relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this was an important hit. Even if it wasn't maybe conscious.
It's that The Onion meme where it's like devastating, the worst person you know just made a really valid point.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point, because I think, you know, like you said, Louisa, he's supposed to be this, like, you know, like, trademark great guy. And her last boyfriend turned out to be a monster. So, like, literally. So it's like, okay, well, my last boyfriend literally changed before my eyes. Like, this guy.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, like, this guy is just, like, a little unconfident, you know? But
he kind of proved her expectation of,
oh,
like, he will change on me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he proves also that, like, you know, in a couple episodes before this, he says, like, you know, she doesn't love me. And so, like, you know, and like Leslie and I were saying, like, well, she never told you that. Like, what the fuck? But like, he is he's like making that happen. Like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy for him. He is like,
absolutely. He's assuming it's true, and then he's behaving like it's true, which is making her not love him.
Right. Yeah. Which is making her be like, dude, I have bigger problems right now. Like, I have got a lot going on.
And to draw, like, I guess, like a parallel with those bigger problems, in these 2 episodes, or actually in the first one that we watched, episode 5, where, you know, we meet Glory. So this is the first time, I haven't seen it in a long time, or maybe it's the first time in a long time that Buffy has been beaten by someone in the first encounter.
Rough.
Right?
Rough.
I have to take a minute out because something has awoken inside of me.
Tell me.
Like, I just thought about Glory. Like, I don't remember, I guess I just didn't remember, like, her whole look, but she is so goddamn hot.
Yeah.
Glory
is so
beautiful.
She is straight up Cher from, what is it? What's the movie that we all
from
watch?
From Clueless?
Clueless, yeah.
Yeah. She's just so, and she's wearing, she comes in and she's like, first of all, she's in this, like, dilapidated warehouse in, like, red dress, like, sexy prom wear, and she just
red lips.
She literally, I wish she would just step on my throat until I forgot to put Pythagorean theorem.
Me too. Like, I'm like,
holy shit.
Yeah, like there's a top shortage, and like, Glory come visit me in Philadelphia sometime.
Oh my
God. Glory made me. I mean, I agree with you both. She's so hot, and I loved especially her sense of humor.
Yes.
Like, it's being like very cruel and kind of sexual, but she's clearly enjoying herself.
Yes. And like it's the peaks and the valleys, right? You know, she's so casual about it, and then she's like sultry, and then she like just starts crying out of nowhere and like ripping her own hair out. She's like so dynamic. It's insane. I've never like, I think the last like good, like charismatic bad guy was the mayor.
Totally.
And, like, we have not had a good bad in so long. And her like coming in and just being like, hey, boys, I'm going to fuck up your entire dimension.
Well,
like,
and as a weird side note, you all have seen Cabin in the Woods, I imagine, right?
Yeah.
So Cabin in the Woods is written by Drew Goddard. And Drew Goddard is one of the main writers for Buffy. He's like, that's how he came up. So like one of the weird things is that in the last like, I don't know, 10-15 years, you know how everybody talks about Marvel and whatever the fuck, all these like big blockbuster movies, they were actually written, if not by Joss Whedon directly, by people who came out of Buffy.
That makes a lot of sense. Honestly, so the humor, like the self-referential jokes,
making fun of themselves, like everything, the asides, the very like it's extremely like. And now that I've told you, go back and watch any fucking Marvel movie that is written by
seriously, like Iron Man or Iron Man.
Iron Man, exactly. Now, the Avengers. The Avengers is also them.
Yeah, inescapable.
Exactly. And then if you don't want to do Marvel, Kate, you can do Cabin in the Woods. Cabin in the Woods is written by Drew Goddard. And now you'll see his name in the credits whenever you like are watching. And you'll be like, that's the guy that Lisa was saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he wrote this movie. I love it. Turns out there's people that don't. But the thing is that it's a self-referential meta-narrative movie about all of how all of the horror narratives and tropes have like a purpose, right? And in Cabin in the Woods, the purpose is that there really are these gods who control existence, and there's like a whole system in which we use horror to feed human sacrifices to these gods.
Right, so, to keep them like from swallowing up the earth.
Exactly. So like every time we have a horror movie that's like, oh my god, the fucking Japanese spirit comes through the camera or through the screen when you watch the videotape. Yeah. Or like, oh my god, it's a family of zombie rednecks that come and eat you when you get broken down on the road. Literally every stereotype, they include it, right, in that movie. Right. And watching today these two episodes, to me, Glory is one of the archetypes that spun out Cabin in the Woods.
That honestly makes a lot of sense. Like,
Do you see where I'm going? Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Like a deeper, like unknowable.
Yes, because it was like they had to go back to the watchers and shit and be like, what is this? We don't know what it is. And then they were like, is she a demon? What is she? She's a god. Spoiler alert.
She has her name. Yeah, before name. She can, who cannot be named.
Exactly. So it's like, it's really interesting because so many concepts that now dominate a lot of the movies that people enjoy came from Buffy. And I think Glory is totally one of them. She,
I mean, for better
rules.
Or for worse, honestly. Because I love, you know, I love Buffy, but I've almost feel guilty that...
that you love it because of the Joss Whedon.
Well, no, that these tropes have become so like commonplace in, you know, like all of the movies. Because I really, 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 really don't like superhero movies, but I understand like Buffy is her own superhero.
Well, and I would throw relativism in there and as like a lens in the sense of like. I'm not saying I'm 100% right, but I do think that it's better that, let's say, the version of the Avengers or like Captain America that came out 50 years ago was not self-critical, was not analytical of the pop culture around it and around him. There are changes that Joss Whedon's legacy has has created in these, like the way the dialogue happens, the way the characters are developed, that I think are more honest. I don't know, like more, Joss Whedon's shows were the first shows that I ever saw. They were like, instead of making up a fake soda, like Duff Soda or whatever.
Oh, they
actually like mentioned the names of things and comic books and like all these things that actually impacted the writers and the people watching this as real pop culture.
Yeah,
and
they are very pop culture aware and referential. Yeah, which creates a reality.
It breaks down the fourth wall, I guess. I don't know. Like, it makes it so that this isn't solely fantasy. It is influenced by real humans who really made this and exist in the real world.
Also, the trope of, like, I guess it's not a trope, but, like, the format of, you know, before it was just, like, with Transformers movies, like, it just action, 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 start to finish, nonstop. And then, you know, Joss comes in and does these things of, like, you know, we're going to have beats of action and, like, these huge set pieces, but in the interim, we're going to hang out at the bar and talk to each other, or we're going to hang out at the shawarma shop. Like,
exactly.
That, yeah.
At
that
the magic box.
Yeah. Exactly.
And we're going to have personal relationship problems. Like, we're going to have the wife or the girlfriend who's upset that she's not getting enough time.
Yeah, Anya. Anya wants an apartment so she can, like, have a baby and a puppy or whatever.
Yeah. And Anya wants to just become a capitalist, which is
she She does. But, you know, it's,
I mean,
so
she's
cute.
New.
Exactly. She's if you show up new and you look around, you're like, yeah, that seems like the cool table. Those are the cool kids to sit with. You aim for that until you know better.
Back to Glory for a second. Like, the thing that I love about her is, like, so she is, like, she's, like, the crazy sexy, but, like, part of the reason why she's, like, crazy is because she can't exist on the Earth without, like, mind-sucking from humans. So, like, there's that part where she kind of starts spinning a little bit out of control.
Yeah.
Oh, where she's having a million thoughts at once.
Yeah, and she says this whole thing that, like, you know, I loved this, Leslie, I wrote it down. This whole mortal meat sack comes with stinking bile, sweat, and protein. And then she's like, oh,
that's
God.
That's got a Kate moment written all over it.
And, like, then she has to, like, put her hands, like, stuff her hands into this, like, poor janitor's mind and take his mind. And, like, it's, you know, she doesn't kill them. She just makes them, like, she takes all of their sanity.
Meat blobs.
Yeah, she makes them meat blobs because she needs their, like,
their ability to, like, logic? I don't know. Yeah, or to, like, understand the world.
Or just, exist on our
planet.
To
organize. Yeah, it seems like, what's it called? The overload? Sensory overload is what
she says. Yeah. Because she doesn't have, I mean, she's a god. So it's like, gods don't need to be, like, defined in time and space and form.
Yeah.
And, like, she has to at this moment. She's, like, on Earth and has to look like a hot chick in a red dress.
But, you know, like, that's what's so fucking interesting. You just made me realize the through line, I think, that I was trying to say with these two episodes. It's like, so far we've talked about Riley and Buffy and Glory. Mm-hmm. And in the episodes we watched, they, all three of them, are struggling with their limitations, with, like, their newly discovered limitations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Riley used to be powerful because of an artificial thing, and now he's, like, a regular mortal and he hates it. And Glory is a god, but now she's in the mortal coil and it limits her powers and abilities and comfort, and she hates
it. Right, yeah.
And Buffy is entering a space where she's like, my mom is sick. My relationship is not working out. Like, we see, and then she meets Glory and she gets beaten. And it makes her start to think, because she starts to get obsessed with, like, how, I think this is in the episodes we watched, how other slayers have been killed before.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty soon. Yeah.
Pretty soon. So it's, that's all I'm saying is that she becomes, after this, because Glory beat her, she becomes obsessed with, like, how did she becomes obsessed with collecting more information about how other Slayers died in order to try to, like, mitigate all the possible ways that she could die. So for the first time, maybe we're seeing her sort of dealing with aging mm-hmm. and with like human limitations and with meeting something that is greater than her and having to face with like the history of like, you know, sort of like us going to the doctor and being like, oh shit, do I have diabetes in my family?
Yeah.
Like, who do I need to like talk to for the family tree of diseases? Oh my God.
Right.
Yeah. So it's really interesting that this season that I thought I hated is maybe just a season that makes me uncomfortable.
It is an, I have to say, oh, yeah. It is a really uncomfortable season.
Yeah.
But even also, like, the very real situation that happens to, I'm sure it happens to a lot of us, especially, you know, femme-identifying people who, like, go to the doctor and they can't figure out what's wrong
yeah.
and they don't seem really worried about yeah, it, but like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, you know that there's wrong. Something wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I think, yeah, this season is incredibly uncomfortable because Buffy is like face to face with her mom being sick, thinking, yep. you know, and like the whole idea of it, like, is it quote unquote just like real human stuff or is it supernatural stuff?
Well, that's a question I had for you all. Like,
yeah,
because is it, they kind of imply that maybe Joyce got sick because of the implanted memories by the monks.
Right.
But it seems like it's just like her paranoia and frustration and rage makes her think that, and they never corroborate that later, right? So we don't know. But do you all think, like, do you all see this as just, this is like Joyce just got sick? Or
I do. Yeah.
Well, the only reason that I think it might have to do with, like, you know, yeah, like Dawn's whole thing and the implanted memories is that because there's a scene in an earlier episode where, and it's just for a minute, where Joyce like kind of realizes that Dawn, she doesn't know who Dawn is.
Right.
And then she has a fainting spell.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like, maybe just her
You're
body
so
like
right.
rejecting this supernatural occurrence.
Yeah.
But the reason that it just is confusing because it's not affecting anybody else.
Right. And like, I think the thing is
that's a good point.
That Buffy realizes is like, once her mom starts getting sicker and she's like trying to find solutions for it but can't, is that like there aren't always supernatural solutions to human problems, which is why this, you know, why this whole season is like incredibly uncomfortable, you know, and like,
yeah,
she has a
like
now human, you know, the monk tells her like Dawn is innocent. She doesn't know what she is.
She just
thinks
human.
She's a kid.
Yeah.
So she's just a kid who's experiencing all this shit, but she isn't. And like Buffy has to like live with that and treat Dawn like a sister, even though she knows that she's like, all the memories are fake. But then are they? Because they have, like, I don't know, you know?
Yeah, the idea of, like, perception and reality was very interesting to me in this episode. Like, well, if you have a memory of something, who cares if it's not real? Like,
right.
you still have those feelings and the things that you think you experienced, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, like, the whole thing about Buffy dealing with when their dad left them, which is like something they didn't really ever talk about, which I think is kind
before
of
before this. Yeah.
It's a little potentially a little retconned because like at one point he seemed like
definitely.
A nice dad. But, you know, now her dad is like off in
with
Spain.
His secretary.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
living,
you know,
stereotype, I think, is literally what she says.
Yes, exactly.
Living the stereotype.
And like Dawn is, you know, like when he left, Dawn cried for a week and Buffy's like, I was there. Like, I felt her cry for a week, but like...
Like, she remembers the pain of seeing her little sister cry. Yeah.
But apparently that didn't happen. But then, like, if you... Like you said, Leslie, like, if you think it happened and you have the memories and Dawn thinks she's human, does it matter whether it happened or not happened?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's interesting to think about.
Yeah. But yeah, this, I don't know. I feel like this season is very complicated.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
So part of the reason that it's conflicting for me, because I understand everything that you're saying, and I am definitely not ready to argue like, oh, Dawn's not real. She doesn't matter. I'm not saying anything like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that is not my argument, but it, like, watching Buffy navigate these two episodes specifically, but also after with this, it feels very much like the narratives that teach women or women identifying people to that part of your identity is to sacrifice for everyone around you and to be the responsible one who feels the feelings all the way to the deepest depth and then keeps others from having to do that. And you know, otherwise just like sacrifices your own existence and desires for the benefit of others. And in so many ways, even before Dawn, because, you know, Buffy, and I don't know if this is because of personal experience, but Buffy is faced with like being in college and having to be like the head of the family. So like on top of like, I'm the Slayer and good and evil and shit is all on my shoulders, which we've like already dealt with for seasons before. Suddenly now she is having to deal with something that us regular mortals can probably identify with as like a horrible thing that happens to you when all of a sudden it's your job to take care of your parents. When all of a sudden there's no one that you can call to say, hey, can you help me with this? Because it's them calling you for help.
Right. We've talked about it earlier, but like Joss never lets Buffy be a young woman.
Never. Yeah.
So in the beginning, she's only like a kid, you know, like when she loses her virginity with Angel, the way her mom talks to her about it is like just so awful. And like her whole experience makes it, it's all very juvenile and sad. And then, you know, she goes to college and she has a little bit of that, of the taste of that. But then she immediately has to be in like surrogate
the
adult
caveman
mom
episode, I think, is like symbolic of like you just get to be ridiculous right now. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
it's like we'll give you one.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So I would agree. So, I agree with all of this about Buffy. And then I wonder, because I mean, spoiler, the next episode is basically about like queer family abolition.
Right.
So, you want to just jump right into that now?
Sure.
Yeah.
But so, like, part of me is like, is Joss Whedon saying that, like, or the writers, are they saying that, like, if you're queer, you can escape this shit? Or, like,
it's a weird one. I do believe Joss wrote this one. I think it was Joss.
He did. Yeah. He wrote, and directed. And this is, like, a favorite of mine because it is, you know, it is my, it's like my politics, I feel like. But okay. So the next episode is family. Willow feels betrayed when Tara's family makes a surprise visit to Sunnydale for her birthday, threatening to reveal a shocking secret that it could endanger all of their lives. Meanwhile, Buffy
sorry, yeah, keep going. I thought that was the end.
You're like, director cut note, director's cut notes for the description of the episode.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Buffy and Giles secretly try to learn more about the new evil that is hunting her and her family. So okay. I love this episode because
it has Amy Adams in it.
It has Amy Adams in it.
That's
as a total bitch.
I saw her and I was like, what the hell are you even
as a
doing?
Gigantic
she's
bitch.
Such a little bitch in it. I know.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But like, she's so funny.
I mean, this whole episode is about, well, I love Tara. Like, I'm a huge Tara fan.
Let's talk about it. Okay,
we have no lukewarm opinions on this.
I know.
Strong feelings only.
I feel like this episode is about Tara finding her like queer family and not her like blood kin.
That's true. I absolutely give you that. It makes me sad that she hadn't realized that before this confrontation.
Yeah.
Well, she's 20.
I know. Yeah. But she obviously was already. So I feel like she already did have that queer family. The part that was missing was the confronting her own family.
Yes.
And honestly, that is not something that needed to happen with endangering all of her friends.
Well, no, I agree.
But you know what I mean? So
they forgave her, which I think
totally, totally. No, and that's why I'm not saying kill Tara. I am not. Hey. You know, listen.
Is that why you really like season 6?
No. I do love Willow losing her fucking mind because we love that shit, right?
But yeah, of course.
I absolutely hate everything that happens. Moving forward, we don't even have to get into it. But as somebody who loved Buffy and Angel and pretty much like all the Joss Whedon and Joss Whedon
spinoffs
people,
Joss Whedon
I'm like his children, what they created. I did hear the criticism of like Joss Whedon can't really write women, right? And at first, I didn't really get that. Because I love Buffy so much. And it's like, I just feel like, okay, the way that I thought about Buffy was like, I watched all this superhero bullshit. And to me, Buffy is like Spider-Man in that it's not about her gender. It's not about her identity in any way. It's just like, she's just like a regular person who got assigned accidentally this responsibility because of her abilities, and now she has to struggle not just with everything that it means to be a person, but also this additional responsibility, right?
Right.
And to me, that was the first time that it wasn't about, like, she's sexy, like Wonder Woman, or, like, she's, like, an apprentice to Superman, like, Supergirl, or she's, you know, like, it was just the first time that it was just like, no, man, she's, like, a regular teenager, and shit is happening to her, and she has to deal with it. And so I just didn't understand that criticism of Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
And then we get to Tara. And the thing is that Tara to me is a character that, except for this episode, family, she is two-dimensional and only exists to develop Willow and to develop the gang, right? So she is literally used in this series in the way that we dislike it when we use women characters to prop up a male character's development. And even the fact that later, sorry, spoiler alert, she gets killed, it makes it like she was a sacrificial lamb for Willow's development, for the plot's development, for the gang's development, and Tara never mattered. And she doesn't have any depth ever in what I can recall, other than this one episode where we see what family she came from and what her relationship with them might be like and her queer experience, what that might be like. This is the only episode where I saw Tara as a person. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I understand that. I think that probably if you're like a Tara fan, a lot of your experience of Tara is just like relating to her in some way, like
feeling you kind of in, maybe,
or she's just like sort of the introverted weirdo that like in this episode, for instance, and I know we're talking about this episode, but she like makes some weird kind of like nerd jokes that like
nobody gets,
and everyone's like, what is Tara's deal? And like part of it, again, like there's this whole like shorthand that they use over and over again in Buffy where they're like, oh, you know, she's Wiccan, and it's like she's a lesbian, you know, and it's like,
oh, it's like code.
Yeah, like Xander and like Buffy don't understand her.
And like, what is she like? Which is totally like, what do lesbians like?
And like,
I can't get her a crystal ball again.
Yeah.
And of course, Giles has to point out, like, you're in a fucking magic shop and she's into magic, but like, I just think of, I guess I think of her as being like this sort of awkward character who, like, she does have a lot of like witch skills. Like, she has a lot of, I mean, she taught Willow a lot of stuff at the beginning.
Totally. I.e. exists for Willow's development, Kate.
Well,
just said.
I don't know. I do think that, like, if they had broken up at some point.
Here's a question.
Okay.
Why did the writers never turn it into Tara is the superior witch with more experience and more knowledge who taught Willow everything she knows, so she saves the day?
I mean, they should do that. I agree.
But they didn't because they never saw her as a full person. She was a temporary device to move Willow along in the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is, I guess for me, and Leslie, chime in, like, I feel like when you've watched this show so many times, you definitely get to, like, death of the author territory where you're like, Tara is how, like, I imagine her, you know, and I think that's probably true for a lot of, like, teenage femmes who are watching
this.
Yeah,
and I think especially now, you know, with, like, internet, you know, fan fiction, AO3 stuff, like, you are now more than ever able to sort of, well, first of all, you really, if you see yourself in somebody, you know, like some people see in Tara, like, you kind of imprint on them a little bit, so maybe you see what you want to see in them as a character,
right?
And like, this happens a lot, I'm gonna say this again, this happens a lot in anime. Like, you get these, like, kind of, especially in like long-running shonen series like Naruto or One Piece or whatever, you get these, like, kind of one-off three episode arc characters who, like, don't really, obviously don't have a, you know, a point other than to move the plot along and, like, help the main character, like, become the best or whatever, and then you never see them again. But there are so many people who are devoted to this one single character who's in, like, three episodes of a 20-year long running show. Oh, that, yeah. that put so much of themselves in them and, like, they're the ones that flesh them out. So maybe Tara's just a character that maybe the show didn't flesh them out, but because the fans have done that for them, like, yeah, you know, they could still be a very powerful character.
100%. That's how I feel about from Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah.
Bill, what's his name?
Buffalo Bill.
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Buffalo Bill is a reviled character by some, and one that the movie didn't flesh out in any sort of significant way other than negative ways. But in my imagination, I love him. I wear the t-shirt. I think he's great. He represents queer identity in a lot of ways. And even, like, the like, perceived danger being blown up into they will kill us and take our skin is hilarious to me.
So right. Yeah, that's like a big reclamation.
Yeah, I love it. But the difference is, I wouldn't ever argue with somebody that Buffalo Bill was a well-fleshed-out character that actually represents queer people. And that's the way that I feel about Tara. Like, a lot of us grew up in a time where we had limited sources of representation, so we did cling to the few, like, little slight avenues of, like, this one could be queer. It's sort of been implied, and this person is definitely gay. And it's the only character, but it was never the main ones. You know what I mean? Like, they were never people being, like, fully fleshed out. And to me, it's a detriment to Buffy that Willow, like, Buffy the series, not Buffy the character, that Willow's character as a queer person was sort of just used as a stepping stone to her identity as a witch. And not really fully fleshed out other than just, like, you know, a stepping stone to being powerful in a different way.
But I think you have to also consider, like, the time that Buffy was written and shot in. Like, I was looking this up, like, because I was looking at, like, the first time that because this really bothered me that they had a perfect moment to kiss on the floor of the bronze on the dance floor, and they just like hugged each other like they were two like Christian schoolgirls at the library.
No, I know it.
And I was like, this fucking sucked. I want them to like get hot and heavy.
I know. But
I was reading something about like the very first like kiss between two women who were established lesbians on a TV show had only happened 3 years prior to the show.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, like
that was like a big deal. There was a
And it was a huge deal. But so they like, I feel like they probably couldn't, or at least felt like they couldn't flesh Tara out in a way that they wanted to.
Sorry, did both of you watch Buffy when it was like live? Or only
I watched it later, I think in my
So I watched it live. So 20. I absolutely
I probably watched it like half, like on and off, but like I didn't watch it full until much later.
No, so Buffy was like a show that like I waited every week for the episode.
Aww, I love
and,
that.
And yeah, and so I understand 100% what you're saying, that it wasn't okay, but I think it's just as unrealistic to retroactively be like, oh, they couldn't do this, but I'm going to assign more like queer identity to this than what actually was given.
But they do that.
Wait, hold on. I'm saying it is as unrealistic to retroactively say that as it is for me to say it wasn't a good enough representation.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I think both of our expectations are unrealistic.
Sure.
I
think that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's okay. It's totally fine. But I actually think that it benefits queerness to then critically look back at this character instead of nostalgically looking back at this character and say, nostalgically, yes, this represented this for me, but critically, this was never enough. And this is not who I wanted it to be. And it's the way that I look at Buffy, and it's the way that like even like not to completely derail what the podcast is actually about, but but have you all seen the Barbie movie?
No.
Not yet.
My God. Well,
Louisa,
you have to.
I'm a hater. I'm going to wait until everyone is talking
about
it.
Okay, that's fine.
Just until everyone stops talking about
it. Okay, that's fine. And I'm not going to tell you, I am not going to tell you anything about the movie. I'm just going to tell you about like the critical reception or like people, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's really weird because you keep hearing people being like, oh, how do you not see, like, how are you celebrating this toy that hurt some girls' like vision of themselves and their body image and all this stuff? And they are absolutely just like settled on the critical view of this is what this toy did as far as they understand.
Right.
And not open to just like, oh, we just want to hear the narrative, the story, in the way that you all are telling me, like, we just want to hear the story with someone like Tara involved in it, right? And it doesn't have to be politically perfect. It doesn't have to be the perfect representation of womanhood. It is just yet another version that wasn't seen before this, that for me was a first time. And there is value in that. That doesn't mean you don't still turn around and criticize it. So anybody who's being like, the Barbie movie is perfect feminism.
That's 100%
no
notes.
That's fucking crazy. Yeah.
It's insane. Exactly.
Right. Well, and I
would say, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. That doesn't mean you can't see yourself in it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have good political points. It's just still a fucking movie.
there's a thing in video games called like the broken puppy. Like, you know, it's like a puppy with a busted leg or whatever, and like nobody wants it, and it's like peeing on everything or whatever. But like, you look at it, and it's like
all
the most perfect. Yeah. But you look at it, and it is like the most perfect thing for you, you know?
Right.
Like, it doesn't, you know, yes, it has its flaws, but because there's just something about it that resonates with you, like, you tend to ignore. But give it a pass.
Listen, I completely agree. I, again, no spoilers, but I think maybe my favorite Buffy episode is Smash. You all know which one that is off the top of your heads.
Yeah.
Okay, so definitely not necessarily a positive feminist message. Extremely conflicting in terms of relationship ethics. It's, yeah, no, it's bad, but I saw myself in it. I think it's awesome. It turned me on. It's,
yeah, I mean, Buffy yeah. and Spike's relationship yeah. is something that I, that like, I turns me on as well.
Hell
and
yeah.
And like, is very, we should have you on to talk about Smashed.
Mm. I would love it.
Yeah. Let's do that. Cause I think it's, yeah, it's a really complicated feeling that episode brings about.
If you like it, you have problems. And if you don't like it, you have problems. You have
yeah. problems. Well, and I would say like back to the, like a little bit of the Barbie thing and like, you know, the unofficial Barbie, like, you know, people talk about like, oh, you know, you dress her up, you play with her, you do like, she hangs out in her townhouse and whatever. But it's like the unofficial, like unacknowledged thing that everyone did with their Barbies was
they
like
fuck
make
each
them
other.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Like they would fuck each other, then fuck G.I. Joe.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
and then like, you had six Barbies but only one Ken, so all the Barbies fucked the one Ken. So technically you're a polycule.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And so it's like, well, you know, maybe the Barbie is teaching you like fucked up body image shit, but it also might be teaching you some sort of interesting like queer poly
yes.
you know like family making in the future, like totally. I'm not gonna say that Barbie as its own property has any kind of revolutionary potential, but like
the way we use it
exactly yeah. Yeah. And like it's yeah. the same thing with Buffy. Like Buffy was not written to be this like sort of like radical leftist.
You're right.
Property. Yeah.
Maybe in Joss's mind.
No, that's
mind,
a really good way to put
that,
it. Yeah. I well, think, fuck yeah. Joss's mind. We don't
right.
care.
Right. yeah.
But no, that's a really good point, Kate. Like, right. My critique is like about how she was written and the intention with which she was written.
Yes.
And not about how she was received by fans.
Yeah,
I totally understand
yeah,
how she
yeah.
like.
You're talking intention, and I think Kate is talking impact.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So that's why I do not at all challenge the impact of Tara's character or why people would identify with her. I challenge Joss Whedon as a writer.
Yeah, that's fair. That's always fair.
And it's like, I think the intent behind this character was not as like magnanimous as everybody received it. And he just fucking lucked out.
Yeah, that's always fair. And I mean, I do have to say too, like when there is a dearth of like representation,
yeah.
you know, you find the one thing that you, that kind of looks
yeah,
like
yeah, you're
you.
Like, this Fraggle Rock is me.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, you know, for the kink community when Secretary yeah. was the only thing available.
Yes,
and you're like, this
exactly.
is me, you know,
yeah.
and it's
yeah.
problematic, but it's also hot. And like,
yeah.
we can talk about that anytime, but
yeah.
Do we want to talk about Spike?
I always want to talk about Spike.
Since we're talking about hot, problematic things.
Well, and not just that, but actually, Spike is another character that this season is dealing with his limitations, right? With like,
yes, absolutely.
And for him, they're artificial. So it's almost like an allegory for society, I guess, where like he has some natural being version of himself. And this externally placed thing on him in his mm-hmm. a chip in his brain is keeping him from being the actual animal thing that he is supposed to be.
Right.
And, you know, it's also difficult to separate the whole falling in love with Buffy thing from this. Because, like, if he were capable of still seeing her as an adversary that he could stand up to, would he fall in love with her?
That's a really good question.
That is a good point.
You know, so I don't know. I think he's super interesting in this season. Because then, yeah, like we revisit some of his origin story this season. We learn how he became a vampire and how he killed two slayers in the past.
Oh yeah, didn't he like do it on a subway?
Yeah, he killed one in the 70s on the subway, but he also killed one in like the 1800s or whatever.
Yes.
When he first yeah. became a vampire.
I think that's the next episode.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see the details of that
cool
next.
For love, yeah.
But it's Very well, and actually, Fool for Love. I can't wait for you all to talk about it. I'll listen to that episode.
Yeah, yeah.
It is kind of the root of Spike's particular struggle right now. Of like, when he was a human, he was one type of person, and then becoming a vampire gave him the ability to be like this whole other type of confident, whatever person.
Yeah.
But the little fucking thing in his brain is now keeping him from being that. So has he reverted to being the like shitty little human who runs after skirts because the fucking thing in his brain keeps him from being Vampire Spike?
Listen, very interesting. You gotta find stuff to fill your days.
I know, exactly.
You can't keep killing.
No, you can't help but think of this as a mirror. Get the anger out. This is a real mirror that you have to hold up to yourself, where you're just like, "Oh shit, is that me? Do I have to like busy myself with little love things in order to like make the days pass by?"
Oh my god,
Kate.
Yes,
I like lost my mind when he's having a dream. He's beating Buffy, and Buffy's saying shit like, "Oh, I'm coming."
Oh yeah.
I was just sitting there like,
"Oh my god, is that?" So there's a point when he's fucking Harmony.
Yes, that's it.
Yes. Is that what it is? Yeah,
like, and which is about so fighting. Racy for I a know. WB yeah. show.
Totally, her
full top off. You could tell.
Yeah.
And also just like the whole, just the idea of the fact that people like have fantasies about someone else while they have sex with their lovers.
Crazy. Yeah. In a way that, yeah, like, I mean, I feel like that's something that like you don't realize is like okay.
Until you're
for a very
yeah.
long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd make the argument that like getting into a fucking fist fight with the person that you secretly love is probably not okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, consensually, feel free.
Just
but...
wait till we get to Smash.
Yeah. Consensually do whatever you'd like.
Yeah.
That's true.
As an aside that I would want to throw in, one of my partners this weekend beat the shit out of a guy at a party, so it was all consensual.
Oh, okay.
Boxing gloves. And this guy, one of his things that he likes to do is he mansplains boxing to a woman until she gets incredibly annoyed with him, and then she can beat the shit out of him.
Oh my god.
Can I go to this?
This guy rules. I mean, he really knows what to go for, right? Like, incredible scene. But anyway, so back to Spike. Yeah.
Hot.
No. Yeah.
Not right now, I gotta say. Not right now, but he will be later when he regains his fury.
Joss calls him the most fleshed out character in Buffy. Do you guys agree with that?
Whoa.
You know what? Sorry to jump in and be the first one to answer, but I'm gonna say yes.
No, go ahead.
If you also have seen Angel.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Leslie won't watch Angel.
Oh, really?
I didn't say I won't. I said I haven't.
Okay,
I
know, well, we have to figure out what to do when we're done.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, we're in Angel. We got to keep going.
Angel has like the series. Angel has probably one of the best endings to a series I've ever seen in my life. Like, just perfectly encapsulates the entire series, and it ends on like a hopeful note about heroes possibly saving us all. Like, it's beautiful, man. Angel is amazing, like the series, not the guy. But
yeah, I liked the series a lot. I thought
the series
really
is really great. Just like Buffy, it has like a very corny first season, so
yes,
expect
indeed.
That. But after that, it's really fucking good, and it has great actors, and it's very complex and deals with exactly the same kind of like, not exactly the same, but like this in the same way deals with complex topics as Buffy does. But Spike, if you look at his arc, not just across Buffy, but all the way through Angel, he goes through everything that Angel went through and beyond.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm.
Right, like getting his soul back.
Yeah, exactly. And he actually, he is not as self-serving as Angel in some ways, and just completely goes from, like, the who we saw, because he's in season one of Buffy, remember, in the high school, where he, like, comes in with Drusilla, or whatever her name is, and he attacks them in season one of the high school. And he's just, like, a full-on, like, regular vampire that you think you're never going to see again, and she's probably going to kill him. But then we see he, like, the depths of, or the heights of power that he tries to reach to, the depth of the history as a vampire that he's had, and then also the growth he has post meeting Buffy goes beyond anything Angel ever did. And
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I didn't know that Joss Whedon said that about him, but I totally agree. I think him and Cordelia, believe it or not.
Oh, Cordelia gets, like, so, like, well
an angel
out.
an angel.
Mm-hmm. But it's funny because Spike kind of fills Cordelia's role in Buffy as, like, the person who is like, Buffy, you're an idiot and you're gonna get killed.
Yeah, and that's, then grows. I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. That's really funny that you make that comparison, because they are kind of like the same sort of, they fill the same role.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like a little bit, like, is a little bit of a foe to Buffy, but is also oddly, like, around all the time.
Exactly.
And still wants
sort of the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
Situation. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Willow is very well fleshed out.
I agree.
Yeah.
Because we also see in Willow a lot of fallacy, like, she's not perfect.
Oh, so much. Yeah.
And real, just like, she was so two dimensional at the beginning. And just, yeah, I agree. Willow is very well fleshed
out. The whole thing with kissing Xander.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
When he was with Cordelia and she was with Oz, like, that was so real to me.
Yeah.
That was tough to watch.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, everyone has done something like that, particularly when they're younger, you know,
and stupid,
not knew what to do. Like, no one is taught how to, like, talk to each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's like dumb, but it's also just
how,
like,
to make an ethical decision
when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or just navigating, like, accountability.
Right. And just, like, really complicated feelings where you're like, I don't want to make this guy sad, but I have feelings for this other guy and I don't know what to do about them, you know? And it's like, instead of saying something, I'm going to fall into a hole with this other guy and kiss him while Cordelia is almost dying on a spike. You know? Like,
this is why everybody needs to watch Buffy. How else are you going to make a real comparison your life?
Exactly. Yeah. Seriously. I mean, season 5. Yeah. The reason why I love it is because it is a very interesting blurring and conversation about what happens when you're surrounded by supernatural. I mean, this is the whole Buffy, but, like, this season intensely feels like, what happens when you're surrounded by supernatural things and you yourself are supernatural, but also totally fallible and totally human?
Yeah. Well, so let me throw a weird, I guess.
Yeah, throw it in.
Go for it. Yeah. Okay,
so in family, right? What happens is, one of the things that happens is that, because Tara, she is like her friend group already knows that she's a lesbian, right? Mm-hmm. But her family is able to blackmail her with the ultimatum of, like, we're going to tell them you're a demon, right?
Yes.
So Tara goes, and so that's why I don't think that you can say that the demon thing is a one-for-one allegory for being queer, because they put it next to being queer. They didn't put it there in place of being queer.
Right.
Her friends know she is queer. It almost seems like her family doesn't acknowledge that she's queer. They only, like, confront the fact that she's a demon. So So maybe it's like about how the family refuses to see queer people as they really are, but not about her friends, right?
So the like her friends are with her. Yeah.
So the problematic part here then in the way this episode was written is that Tara puts a spell on her friends to keep them from seeing her demon side, right? Again, yes. Not her queer side, her demon side. And then the effect is that the whole gang is now unable to see demons, period. Yes. So then they get attacked by some demon.
A little bit.
She fucks it up a little bit. We're not mad at her.
Yeah.
It was a little teeny tiny mistake.
Yeah.
It's fine. We're mad at Joss Whedon because with writing this plot out, so then what you're saying is it that the spell that Tara put on people to not see her demon side, is that an allegory for like queer people who stay in the closet and then keep playing at being whatever their family members expect them to be, and therefore they are not helping the overall liberation of queerness? And that, and like her attempt to hide it through magic is an allegory for that? You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand, because it's not, I don't see the demon thing as being a one for one with queerness.
Maybe it's like, I'm thinking about a queerness that is palatable versus a queerness that is like sort of in your face. Like, she's not only queer, but she's a witch, and she hangs out with all these other freaks.
Yeah, and her room has like crystals and all this stuff in it,
you know.
So if she would just hide it all and like act cool about it,
or just be chill,
they would be fine with her being a lesbian if she voted Republican and
exactly. Or even if she just
another white lady,
right? Even if she was just like a, you know, like a Obama era gay, where she just is like, I still want to get married and be normal, just like every other queer.
Yeah, but she doesn't want leather. She doesn't want leather.
A queer
Pride.
Chad.
Yeah, queer Chad. Yeah, like they. They want her to be a queer trad.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes sense. No, you have explained my conundrum.
Because I think you can kind of make the case that, like, the whole family situation is sort of a stand-in for queerness, because her dad says something to the effect of, like, we thought if we let you go to college, you would, like, get it out of your system.
And come home
and be, you know, be quote-unquote normal or whatever.
But the fact that it's like out, so like the fact that the dad walks in and he doesn't ever like question Willow's relationship to her. The family never confronts the queerness directly.
Right.
Yeah.
The family only deals with the fact that she's a demon in a fucking very overt way. you know, like, it is insane that you're saying to people outside your family that she's a fucking part demon.
No, it is. But so, I think it's like their way, you know, it's always been like Spike figures it out, and he's like, oh, this is just your way of controlling women over the years, you know, that like your mom got out of line.
Like, which maybe I think makes it a great message in this episode, because it's like, oh, your identity doesn't actually matter. What matters here is that the hegemony is always going to try to control the people who are not falling in line.
Right, exactly. And Beth, her cousin, falls in line.
Exactly. Yeah. And she becomes even a police person.
She's like, you're being an asshole. You, like, and actually this is kind of in contrast to Buffy. Yeah. It's like, you're being an asshole for choosing yourself and choosing your friends and choosing your lover over your family, and like, you know, she's like, no, these are my people, like, these are the people I want to be with.
I like the distinction they make at the end when the the dad is like, we're her blood kin. You know, he doesn't say family. Like, he.
So, hello, yes. Sophie Lewis. Are you listening?
Yeah.
And then Buffy's the one who says, like, you know, we're her family.
We're her family. Yeah. Because family is not about blood.
Yeah, it goes so much more beyond that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a queer affirming episode. Like, I love it. I think so.
I think so.
So good.
Well, and like the great thing about it is like, there's probably someone else who watched this episode who was like, oh, this is about, I don't know, like traditional values or something. And you're like, okay, whatever, you're wrong. But like, I guess you can think that if you want to. Like, you know, this, the cool thing about shows that have been around for like 25 years is you can interpret them endlessly and
I can tell you that you're wrong
for years. Sure. And I'm like, okay, whatever, Louisa.
Not you guys, but the people
the
people who think that the episode family is about trad values being like good.
Right.
Get out of here. If anything, it's like, oh, such a good warning about women who sign up to be the patriarchy defenders.
Yes.
Like to me, I'm like, oh shit, no, this is awesome. It's showing you, oh, and it's really complicated because Joss Whedon, and you can't ever be like,
I know.
A man said this good thing that should make us women or non-men think differently about some things, but sometimes it is them, unfortunately. Even if they are not walking the walk, sometimes they do figure out the talk.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of men. Yeah. I mean, how many men do we know, not personally,
trying their best,
are aware of, who have written really interesting, complicated pieces just about women.
Yes, exactly.
And then you find out later that they're just like another piece of shit. Like,
I know,
it's incredibly complicated. You know,
it is.
Unfortunately, you know, and like, sometimes I'm like, well, the writer's room at this point was probably pretty fleshed out. There were a lot of people.
But you know what? That's why I'm going to die on this hill. I think every person of every gender needs to watch every single episode of Buffy.
I agree.
And then read Bell Hooks' The Will to Change.
Yes.
There you go.
And those two together will form a well-rounded person who understands that gender is a construct and it's really about how we treat each other.
Yeah. I am fully in support of this.
100%.
This is our dogma.
New book club.
Yeah.
It's just like Buffy and Will to Change. That's all we read over and over again until you quote
just,
it.
This is, it's like we have a cult in the woods, and those are the only two pop culture things that we have available to us. Just Buffy is playing 24/7, and there's like stacks.
And you
get,
and you have quiet time is you get to go read Bell Hooks.
Reflection.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Buffy reflection, Bell reflection.
We have discussion rooms, discussion spaces where you can talk about Buffy or Bell Hooks. That's
and
it.
Both. Hopefully both.
Both. Exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We're going to change the world, y'all.
Oh my God. I love this. Okay. Well, we're going to have you back on to talk about Smash. Because
I would love to.
Totally.
You can handle the complicated, fucked up, like.
It is complicated
hot,
and hot.
Awfulness.
Yeah. And sick and toxic, but so good.
So yes. Good. Exactly.
Yeah. I can't wait. And also, I can't wait to listen to the episodes about the rest of the season because I'm so conflicted about the fact that I hate this season. And you all
love
it.
We're gonna make you love it.
You're right. You know, you're right. You're right. The reason I hate it is because it's so fucking grimy and uncomfortable.
It is very grimy.
Just reaches into weird fucking depths for everyone.
Yeah, the way Glory reaches into your brain.
Yeah. Genre hurt / no comfort.
Exactly. Yes. So I can't wait to hear who you have on for the next ones, and I'm gonna absolutely be on
top of it. Well, Louisa, thank you so much for coming on. Like, I love having. Not that we don't have smart people, but I love having like extra smart people come on the show.
Anytime. Thank you.
Do you have anything you want to plug? Anything you got going on?
Not really. I've got, let's see, I run a monthly, twice a month show hosted by Gary Goldman in New York City.
Are you fucking kidding?
Oh, no, yeah.
I love him. Oh, my God. I saw
honestly, field trip.
I saw him perform in Orlando in, like, 2004. He is, I'm very, like.
He's amazing.
He's incredible.
He's
and he's still, like, killing it. Like, 20 years
later. He's a Gen X hero.
He fucking
He's a Gen X hero.
Oh, my God. I still think about that fucking sugar cookie joke. God, I love
him. Yeah, I think of him every single day when he has, like, a joke that's, like, about how, the kids that grew up in the 70s and the 80s, like, nobody even told them to drink water. And he's like, all of you millennials, you're so well hydrated. That's so intimidating.
Oh, he's moist. I didn't drink water until, like, 2005.
Yeah,
oh, my God. Yeah, no, he talks about it. He's like, you know what we were doing? We're outside drinking out of the hot hose.
Out of the hose, because
our parents wouldn't let us in the house. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh so if you like Gary Goldman or you would like to discover Gary Goldman, we do a show twice a month in New York City, one in Brooklyn and one in Manhattan. So just follow me at Luisa Diaz Nuts on Blue Sky or Twitter, and you'll see the information there. That's all I got.
That's so cool.
Yes.
Nice. And then, you could check out all of our stuff, links to our socials. We are on Blue Sky now as well. And check out our Patreon, where we do extra special Midnight After Dark episodes. You can check it all out.
I believe we're doing Heather's soon.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Heather's. I can't wait.
Yes.
Hell yeah. Corn nuts. I'm into it.
Yes.
But you can check all of that out at fangs.zone. And we'll check you next time on Fangs for the Memories. See you, suckers.